Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to our discussion on day one of the 40 days to PMP exam success curriculum. Now, those of you on the program, you know how we roll. We got a bunch of open-ended questions that you are meant to answer. So these are more like memory joggers, ideas to help you effectively navigate the terrain for your exam as you answer these questions. For those of you that are just joining the journey, you can get all the information you need at projectmanagementdoctor.com/40-day plan. The recommended text is the PMP exam immersion, which we have broken down into a 40-day curriculum. Just to give you some context, there are 35 tasks in the PMP exam content outline. And the idea in this curriculum is to effectively go through all the 35 tasks within 40 days. So if you go to that link, you'll be able to see what exactly we are studying each day. If you go to this link over here, you scroll down, that table that breaks down the 35 tasks, domain by domain and task by task. So for today, this is day one. And day one, if you haven't watched the video, look for the link below somewhere. And the video is all about managing conflict. But as you're managing conflict, in the PMBOK Guide 6, you're in 9.5, Manage Team. And also, you need to be aware in the Agile Practice Guide of Chapters 4, Chapter 5, and page 93. These will help you understand the context of the Manage Conflict task. So let's talk about the open-ended questions one by one. Question number one. It is, what is the Thomas Kilman Conflict Mode Instrument? And this is a model based on the work of Ken Thomas and Ralph Kilman. It describes a number of ways of addressing conflict. To be precise, it's actually five ways. In the PMBOK Guide 7th edition, they seem to have changed the original configuration, but they are originally five ways of resolving conflict. At a high level, you've got problem solving, which is also known as confronting. By the way, also called collaborating. But in the 7th edition, they've spelled them out differently. In addition to this, you have compromise, you have smoothing or accommodating, you have force or direct, and then you've got withdraw or avoid. So that goes to question two. What are the five ways of managing conflict? This was better addressed in the PMBOK Guide 6th edition. You've got compromise or reconcile. You've got collaborate or problem solve, all those ones that I just mentioned, okay? What is another word for compromise? Reconcile, compromise or reconcile. What is another word for problem solving or collaborating in conflict management? That is also called confronting. What is the best approach out of the five given for resolving conflict? Well, the answer is it really depends on the conflict and the individuals at play. But if you want to talk about the one that is more long-lasting, that is far-reaching, when there's the bandwidth and the time to do so, it is the collaborating strategy, for obvious reasons. Collaborating means seeking multiple viewpoints from those involved, sitting at the table, rolling up your sleeves, and having a good old conversation, having dialogue, and resolving that conflict in a transparent way, not rushing through, but really listening out to each other and those involved. Number six, discuss the role of the Scrum Master in resolving conflict. So in the world of Scrum, if conflict escalates, the Scrum Master should be able to facilitate a satisfactory resolution. Now, conflict should be addressed early and in private, but usually in a direct collaborative approach. If disruptive conflict continues, things may have to be escalated outside of the team, more to an organizational HR type level. Okay, this could include disciplinary actions. Just because we are in the world of Agile doesn't mean that it's a free for all and anyone can do whatever anyone likes. No, that won't work. But success in this area of conflict, it depends on the ability of the Scrum Master, the team members, those involved, to be open and honest, to be transparent, to not let conflict fester and to address it before it becomes an issue. So the role of the Scrum Master is getting in front of destructive conflict and facilitating its resolve. Number seven, explain why conflict could be good and beneficial when effectively managed. Well, the PMBOK guide tells us that successful conflict management results in greater productivity, greater positive working relationships, and when managed properly, differences of opinion can actually lead to increased creativity and better decision-making. Number eight, whose job is it to resolve conflict on an Agile team? Now, that's a trick question. So the correct answer to that is it is the team, right? The team in total, it's their job. It's part of their mantra in the world of Agile. Self-organizing, self-managed, self-leading, self-led team. Now, the Scrum Master, remember, is a coach, servant leader. All their job is to facilitate. It is not to resolve the conflict for the people involved. So this is more like a trick question. Okay, it's a job of the team, but as far as the facilitator, the one who we look up to as being a facilitator, could be anyone on the team, but the first person we think about, the first role, is definitely that of the Scrum Master or servant leader. Okay, but again, it's facilitation. It's not resolution. Number nine, to which document should your team members refer to when trying to understand the protocol for conflict resolution? The best answer, team charter, social contract, team contract, and so on. Ground rules, all right? We look for the ground rules within the team charter, which is also called team agreement, team contract, social contract. Number 10, what are the five stages of team development and where will conflict most likely emerge? So the five stages are forming, storming, norming, performing, and adjourning. And storming is the stage where conflict is most likely to emerge. It's not that it couldn't emerge in other places, but when we take a look at the five stages, storming is where we begin to see a lot more of that. Number 11, why should the adjourning stage or mourning stage be avoided at all costs from an Agile perspective or even from a predictive perspective? So the mourning stage is where the team disbands and goes its separate ways. This happens a lot in the world of predictive. In the world of Agile, we don't like this because the team has synergized and they've spent so much emotional investment in the relationship between team members that for the team to disband and go its own way, everyone go their own separate ways, we know that we're losing out. Because imagine having to do that all over again on the next team. And that's why in the world of Agile, when we have a team that's working together, a team that has been co-located in mind, maybe even physically, it works against us when we disband the team, break them apart, and then have to form another team. Think about all of that equity you've put in that team. What a waste. And that's why we avoid it. That's why we try to keep teams together. In the world of Agile, we think team. We don't think project. We think team, and the team tackles the work given, whether that work is development or operations or whatever it is. So that's the way to think. Even from a predictive perspective, if you have a team that's been working together, synergized, they understand each other, they know their quirks, they know what ticks each other off, well, you're going to have a team that is a well-oiled unit. They know the hot buttons. They know what to avoid. They know how they work together. They're able to challenge each other in a respectful manner. That's the dream. That's the ideal team, right? So we don't want to lose all of that investment. Number 12, how does managing conflict differ from claims administration in the procurement chapter? Well, conflict is usually unofficial, and it's not on company record. When you have team members in conflict, it doesn't get on company record typically, right? Except they become so destructive and it has to go down. But on the flip side, claims are on record and they are official once a claim has been raised. So claim is not the same as conflict. A claim is this should have been done in a particular way, it wasn't. Protocol should have been followed, it wasn't. Design should have been followed, it wasn't. But conflict has to do with a lot more personal views and opinions, positions, dispositions, and mindsets in general. When we're talking about claims, we're talking about things that should have been done in a particular way. It's a little bit more rigid. When we talk about claims, we're talking about arbitration being used, litigation being used, and mediation. Those are vehicles for resolve. But when we're talking about conflict, we're talking about compromise or reconcile, force or direct, and things such as that. Number 13, should conflict ever be escalated to upper management? Explain when and why. So if conflict escalates, if it becomes destructive, if it's getting in the way of work, if people could be injured, you know, for example, the crazy news a few weeks ago was that someone was attacked in a Walgreens break room. That's just ridiculous. It's horrible. It would have been better for that conflict to escalate and for action to be taken and that poor person to have been harmed. Just crazy stuff. So if conflict escalates, the project manager should help facilitate a satisfactory resolution. Conflict should be addressed early and usually in private using a direct collaborative approach. So as far as if conflict becomes disruptive, for sure, if disruptive conflict continues, then escalation is definitely on the table. Formal procedures may be used, and this could include disciplinary actions. You know, in extreme cases, even taking it to a court of law for really bad behavior where injury is inflicted on an individual. Such, we don't want to see. All right, so where we need to escalate conflict when it gets really out of hand and disciplinary action is needed, by all means. What are some sources of conflict on teams? Well, sources of conflict include scarce resources, scheduling priorities, personal work styles. Contrary to what a lot of people think, it's not personalities first. Could personalities play a part? Absolutely, but it's not that first and foremost. We could have things such as how people think and reason and work styles and things like that, okay? So team ground rules, group norms, and solid project management practices like communication planning and role definition reduce the amount of conflict. Number 15, what is the difference between managing conflict from a project manager perspective versus a scrum master perspective? Now, the answer to this, from an emotionally developed perspective where the emotional IQ is high, the answer is none. Both should come from a place of servant leadership and facilitation. This is the PMP mindset that we talk about, right? This is what we say when we espouse a PMP mindset for the exam, how the PMI wants you to think as a certified project manager. It does not have anything to do with, oh, I'm agile today, tomorrow I'm predictive. No, it's just one fluid mindset of I'm a servant leader. And that's why when you see the questions on the PMP exam, you need to be thinking like a servant leader. So what is the difference between managing conflict from a PM perspective and a scrum master perspective? And the answer is none. Both from a place of servant leadership and facilitation. And that is the mature PMP mindset that you'll be tested on. Number 16, what is hypernorming and why is it bad? Well, hypernorming, my buddy Roy in our book, PMP Exam Immersion book, he refers to hypernorming as agreeing as a team on every single thing. Have you ever seen some teams that don't want to get into conflict because they believe conflict is bad? And for that reason, they're always like, anything goes. Yes, I agree. I'll do whatever you say. No, that's hypernorming. We don't want that to be the case. And like I said, Roy talks about that in our book, PMP Exam Immersion. And it's bad because conflict could be seen as a productive means to get the team to higher levels higher levels of design, of thinking, higher levels of discovery. So agreeing on everything so as not to rock the boat, right, can reach a breaking point. And when it reaches a breaking point, bad things could happen. So don't hypernorm where you need to challenge the status quo, where you need to challenge in a respectful manner on a team. Go ahead and do so. Number 17, explain why conflict could be viewed as good. Well, successful conflict management, as PMI tells us, results in greater productivity, positive working relationships. When managed properly, differences of opinion can lead to increased creativity and better decision-making. And I found that from all my studying on the topic that diversity of ideas, diversity of thinking, diversity of postures and perspectives, it can go a long way in getting the team to be more developed, more mature, and more sound in its decision-making. So conflict could be viewed as good. We call that constructive conflict. Number 18, what is the difference between compromise or reconcile versus smooth or accommodate? The word smooth needs to be viewed as not completely positive in your direction. In other words, smoothing over the issue, just conceding. You see, when we use the word smooth, we also use the word concede. It's giving up your viewpoint for the sake of harmony and peace. Now think about it. What good is it if you went home without anything? Except you're willing to. You know, I call it the wailing sibling syndrome. You know, that instance where your sibling was wailing that you did something to them or you took their toy and you say, you know what? Just take it. Just take it and leave. Just leave. Just go. Because, yeah, for the sake of harmony and peace, I am going to give up my position. I don't want to hear you scream. Just go. That's the wailing sibling syndrome. That's smoothing, conceding your positional viewpoint. Compromise is different. Compromise is a temporal band-aid. It's like saying, okay, I'll go with a little bit, you go with a little bit, just in the sake of peace or harmony. It's a temporal or partial resolve. It's not a full resolve. It's like a band-aid, as we call it in the United States. In Europe, we could say it's a plaster. Just put a plaster on it. It's temporal. It's going to fall off. And then the wound's going to be exposed again, you know, however much of it healed. You know, sorry to be so graphic. Let's move on. Number 19, why is the morning stage undesirable in the five stages of team development? Again, can you now answer this question? Why is the morning stage undesirable? You know what the morning stage means? The morning stage is an automatic, you know, snakes and ladders. It's a snake going back down to the basement. You got to do the forming, storming, norming, performing all over again, all over again. And you know the thing about the five stages of team development? Why is adding more people to the team just at random undesirable? Because whenever you add someone to the team, it's going back to the basement. It's a snake back to the basement. All right? So hopefully that makes sense now. That's the second time I asked you that one today. Final one, number 20, explain task one. And we're talking about the people domain. Explain people task one, manage conflict, and all its enablers. So the task is manage conflict. Hopefully now you're better able to explain this. Interpret the source and stage of the conflict. Analyze the context for the conflict. Evaluate, recommend, reconcile the appropriate conflict resolution solution. And that concludes our study, my friends. Again, you do know what you need to do. You need to get the book so that you can follow along properly. Okay. And don't forget to go to the website. Got to go to the website, 40-day plan under projectmanagementdoctor.com/40-day plan. When you get to that link, my friends, you will be able to access this PDF. All right. You can download the PDF and follow day by day. All it is to keep you on the straight and narrow, okay? You want to be on the straight and narrow going day by day, you need a plan, a system. So you can see we're on day one and it goes all the way down, all the way down. Then when you get to around day 32, 33, 34, and then 35, we're done. For those of you who are on the program, the PMP Exam Immersion Program, by the way, you can get that down here. So you can sign up for the next 4-hour boot camp. If you sign up for the boot camp, you get the book and you're able to tap into the mock exams at the end. We've got a people mock, a process mock, a business mock. We've got a full mock of 180 questions. We've actually got a couple of 180 question mocks. We've got a wrap-up revision as well. And the idea is that if you're weak in Agile, then you also dial in for the Agile Bootcamp. We got one coming up this weekend. But the whole goal of this program, 40 Days to PMP Exam Success, is to keep you on the straight and narrow. You got to put in the work daily. You know, a lot of our students, they say, Phil, I'm falling off the wagon, I need help. Well, hey, there's no excuse now. You got a vehicle that you can jump on and use this to get to success, all right? So this is the open-ended questions section. If you want to watch the actual video for day one, you got to find it on our channel. Try to put a link below. And if you got any questions, you do let me know. All the very best, and bye for now.